Expat Files with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, it's time to take off those rose-colored glasses and find out. So let's get started. Now, before I get into security issues like I promised, I always get a mixed bag of emails, and now I'll answer a few of those questions. If you've been listening to any of my past shows, you know that I don't recommend that you move down to Brazil, not in any of the big cities anyway. That's despite all the good stuff you've been hearing in the news, all that propaganda. You know, about how Brazil is that new huge upcoming powerhouse of the Americas, and how it's just a place for foreigners who have any money left, that is, to invest. And I've explained in past shows how that's been overblown, and how they've had regular and recent bouts with superinflation, 100, 200, 500, even 1,000% a year, and that's going back to the late 1990s, which isn't that long ago at all. They really don't have a grip on their economy or their monetary system. So if you're thinking because in the last 10 years, they seem to have gotten things ironed out, I'll bet you 10-1 that in the next year or two, they have another big blowout. So if you go down there and convert your money into their currency, the real, and bank in one of their banks, which is what you have to do business down there, and you'll have to convert your money to their currency to buy property down there too. Anyway, based on the last 50 years of Brazilian financial and economic history, you probably stand to lose about 90% of the value of your money if you keep it in the Brazilian real. Well, I explained the recent Brazilian boom and bust cycle and the whipsawing of the currency in one of my past shows. So if you want to check it out, just go to the archives. Anyway, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And right now, if any of you are doubting just how much crime, social upheaval, and disorganization exist down in Brazil, especially in the big cities, I urge you guys to pick up that popular Hollywood chase movie called Fast Five. I do urge you to go and see it or rent it. And it stars Vin Diesel and The Rock. Now, I know these two guys aren't mental heavyweights, but bear with me here. Anyway, I'm not promoting the movie itself or what it stands for. It's the usual Hollywood stuff, a high body count action flick. But what's really interesting is practically the whole movie's shot on location in Brazil and in the real-life ghettos of Rio de Janeiro. And believe me, more than half of that city is ghetto. But as you'll see if you watch that movie, first-world ghettos are not like third-world ghettos. The ones up in the first world, like in Chicago, New York, and L.A., are by comparison to Rio's version of poverty living, like the Bronx versus Beverly Hills. You see, the reality is, down in those massive favelas in Rio, every adolescent kid and his 12-year-old brother has a knife or a gun, and the way up the social ladder is to have an automatic weapon. And as far as the extent of those ghettos or favelas, more than half of Rio is just a maze of interconnected tin roofs and shacks that stretch for miles and miles in every direction. Once you get outside the business districts, the beach strip, and the tourist areas, nobody follows a building code or a plan. The residents just keep building and adding on when they have some more laminated sheets and sacks of cement. It's a huge rat's nest, and believe me, it looks it. And if an expat, gringo, European, or tourist happened to take a wrong turn and end up in there, you just might never come out. And nobody's going to go in after you, not even the police. Now, as for the rest of Rio and the other big cities in Brazil, it's mostly ghetto like that, but every now and then, there are islands of prosperity, with malls and skyscrapers and first-world franchises and decent-looking cars. Now, that's the kind of stuff the Brazil publicity and tourism agencies are turning out, not to mention what the pamphlets and posters show you in travel agencies up north. Well, take my word for it. That movie I'm talking about, Fast Five, tells it like it is in that respect. It's absolutely real and the way it is. So if you don't want to take my word for what it's like in Brazil, go out and see that movie or rent it. It's called Fast Five, and it only just came out a month or two ago. So you can get an idea of exactly what it's like down there right now. And contrary to what you've been reading in the papers or hearing in the news, it ain't pretty. Except, of course, for that lucky 10% of the population who can afford to live in gated communities and have a bodyguard or two to drive them around when they have to skirt the edges of those favelas. But right now, before I get into home security issues like I promised, I have another true-to-life Latin American story that I'm sure is going to scare you. Now, like I mentioned before, Central America, which includes all the Latin countries from Panama up through Mexico, is actually a much more dangerous place than South America. In fact, it's about 3 to 4 times as dangerous for an expat living in Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua, or El Salvador, which are some of the more violent Central American countries, as opposed to, let's say, an expat living in Ecuador, Bolivia, or Chile, which are countries with really rather mild rates of crime. In fact, the statistics show that living in the United States is actually more dangerous. And do remember that even though I said South America is very safe compared even to the United States, well, even in South America, there are some dangerous countries to avoid, like Brazil, Peru, Venezuela, and the boonies of Colombia. Though Colombian cities are absolutely safe, out in the hinterlands, you got that revolutionary group called the FARC, and they like to kidnap and torture people. Anyway, if the Central American countries, that is, countries from Panama up through Mexico, have some of the highest crime statistics in the world, there are still certain places there I can recommend. But let me stop for a second and mention that very high crime rate only exists in the big cities, cities over 50,000 population. Because when you get out in the boonies and to the smaller towns, things are quite different. Those small towns are actually very safe. The truth is, in Central America, any town with less than 50,000 population can usually be a very nice place for an expat to set up shop. Because in those smaller towns, the people know each other and they take care of their own crime because the police are absolutely useless. And when I say they take care of their own crime, there's actually not much crime at all, because when somebody is a bad boy in the neighborhood, the people have their own little neighborhood watch groups. Actually, you might call them vigilante groups, because they have a very harsh way of dealing with criminals. People have been stoned and actually lynched, just like in the old cowboy movies. Because, you know, in a little town like that, if some guy rapes a girl or robs a couple of stores, and the police sit on their asses and do nothing because either they're afraid to act or because the average cop has a 6th grade education down here, and therefore, by definition, not very adept at professional evidence gathering. Or for that matter, reading books or spelling big words. Think CSI with a bunch of 6th grade kids in charge. Not a very comforting picture, is it? But that's exactly what your average police department is like down here. So when there is an incident or crime where somebody's obviously guilty and the police are sitting on their asses, in the small towns, the public takes it into their own hands. And whether you agree with that kind of public reaction or not, it certainly puts a damper on the crime rates. Whereas in the big cities, neighborhoods aren't organized like that. People don't care much about anyone else except their own family members. So all you really have in those big cities is a corrupt, stupid, and uneducated police force and a judicial system that's based on political appointments and nepotism, which of course means it's corrupt and inefficient too. So recently, I was in the second largest city in Honduras called San Pedro Sula. It has about 1 million people and has the singular distinction of being the second most violent and dangerous city in all of Latin America. So you might wonder what I was doing there hanging out in a city like that. Well, you see, the fact is San Pedro Sula is on the very same major road that links one of the best Mayan ruin sites in the world called Copan, Honduras, which is on the west end of the country bordering Guatemala. And speaking of Copan, Honduras, it's one of my very favorite small towns in Latin America. With a population of a little under 10,000 people, it's a very clean and very nice little town. A great place for expats to consider moving to and for tourists to check out because it's pretty much off the beaten path and not yet a high-volume tourist area. And it's very safe. But a few hundred kilometers away on the very same road is the second most dangerous city in all of Latin America, San Pedro Sula. And if you take that highway due east from San Pedro Sula, you'll hit the Caribbean coast and end up in a medium-sized port town called La Ceiba, which has a population of a little under 200,000 people, and because of its size and location, it is rather dangerous too. And remember what I said, if a city has under 50,000 people, it's usually quite safe, and La Ceiba has 200,000, so it fits my definition of being a dangerous town. But once there, you take a hydrofoil for about 45 minutes, and you end up in two of my favorite vacation places in Latin America, Utila and Roatan, Honduras. And both of them are very inexpensive island paradises with very low crime rates. So because I visit Copan and Roatan once in a while, I have to go through San Pedro Sula, the second most dangerous Latin American city. That is, I can't really avoid it if I'm traveling by car. Now, generally, in the daytime when I'm driving, I know exactly what to avoid when I'm going through San Pedro Sula. And I really don't feel any tension or fear at all because I know my way around. And even a very dangerous city like that has its good areas and I know where they are. But this last time, just a little outside the city, I got stuck in a big traffic bottleneck, which looked like it was about a mile long. And I was stuck there for about an hour. Now, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the same road in the opposite direction was free and clear. Cars were zooming past at 70 kilometers an hour. But on our side, we were crawling along like snails. Now, one thing you have to know about Latin America, when there's a bottleneck like that, caused by road crews and road construction, and in that case, there was a bridge being repaired way up ahead. Anyway, every few minutes or so, as you sit virtually parked, just crawling along at a snail's pace, if anything, most of the time, you just turn your engine off, get out of the car, walk around a bit, and talk to some of the guys in the cars next to you. Especially since gas is $5 a gallon, and you don't want to sit in your car with your motor idling. Anyway, every couple of minutes or so, some local man or woman or even kid will be taking advantage of that situation and selling their goods to the stranded passengers, like me. Little groups of these local folks will be working their way from car to car, selling cookies and cakes and bottled water and Coca-Cola and homemade ditties. And you see that all over Latin America. Every time there's road construction, a little impromptu market suddenly bubbles up at the bottleneck point. And the locals, people who live very close to the area, take advantage of the fact that you're a captive audience, you're hungry, you're thirsty, and you're probably very bored. So anyway, that day at 4 in the afternoon, I'd been sitting in that bottleneck for maybe 20 or 30 minutes already, and the little peddlers that normally come up to your car and sell you stuff suddenly scattered and were disappearing into the sunset. They were running down the road in the opposite direction from which I was going, as if their lives depended on it. And these are people who don't leave their posts for anything because they're making money. So I got out of my car and I stepped up on the bumper. I looked on up ahead, in the direction my car was pointed, to check out the commotion and see what these guys were running from. And you know, when I saw what it was, a cold chill went up my spine. Standing at my bumper, I could see about 25 cars ahead, and there was 3 guys going from car to car with guns in their hands, stopping at every single car, robbing them at gunpoint, and working their way down towards me. So here I was, stuck in a virtual parking lot, watching these guys steal from cars one by one, grabbing iPods and wallets and watches and anything that they thought was valuable in each car. And of course, terrifying all the occupants by sticking guns in their faces and in some cases, pulling people out of their cars and roughing them up a bit depending how much resistance they were getting. And all the while, on the opposite side of the little cement meridian, the cars are flying by in the opposite direction at 70 kilometers an hour. And as they see the commotion, they slow down, and suddenly you got a gaper's block. And when they see that these guys are on a robbery jag, and they've got guns, you could hear the tires squealing and see the clouds of dust. Now, as for me, I don't know quite how to explain what it feels like when you're sitting in your car and you can see that in about 5 or 10 minutes, you're going to get robbed at gunpoint like everyone else in line. Now, I'm thinking to myself, I actually have time to hide my valuables so they can't get them. And of course, I had my decoy fanny pack on, which if you remember from a past show, I have an old wallet in there and about $25 and some expired credit cards. But then it went through my mind that if I don't have anything good to turn over to them, they might get mad, beat the hell out of me, or even shoot me. Because I was a prize catch, a first world gringo, maybe the only first worlder that could rob today. And in their minds, a first world guy like me is always a high earner and should have some very nice first world toys on him, like an iPod or a BlackBerry or a laptop. I had a lot of time to think, and I wasn't so sure they'd fall for my decoy fanny pack. These guys were on a mission, and they had guns. And to them, a guy like me might even be worth kidnapping for ransom. A lot of things go through your mind at a time like that. And none of them very good. Now, in the little group of cars around me, I was the first one to figure out what was going on because I stood up on my bumper. The rest of them were just sitting in their cars, gabbing away, not knowing that in about 5 or 10 minutes, the doo-doo was going to hit the fan. But I thought about it for a while, and I didn't feel like causing a big panic, so I didn't yell fire. Though, thinking back, maybe I should have. And when you got 5 or 10 minutes to think about it like I had, all kinds of ideas fly through your head. Like, for one, locking up my car and making a run for it. And then I thought, those crooks are getting close now, and if they see me make a run for it, me, an obvious gringo, light-skinned, a head taller than everyone else, and with a halfway decent car, now, I'm exactly the kind of guy they want to rob. And then I thought, maybe I can lock myself in the trunk. But I reconsidered because I'd seen too many Soprano episodes to think that was a good idea. And then I thought about hiding under the car, and that didn't seem much better. So I took my cell phone and started dialing numbers. Well, first things first, I dialed 911 because they do have a 911 system down here, and it never even connected. I didn't even get a busy signal. That was a complete bust. So the next thing I did was to grab my insurance policy out of the glove compartment and dial the emergency number you're supposed to dial if you get into an accident. And some call center girl answered the phone, asked me if it was an emergency, and I said yes, and she immediately put me on hold. I never got to explain a thing to her. Then I did what I should have done in the first place. I called my lawyer, and luckily he answered, and he told me, look, get back in your car, quickly get together all your ID documents, your passport, your driver's license and stuff, and don't forget about your credit cards and stuff you really can't afford to lose. And then he said, take it all and jam that stuff far up under your dashboard, behind the instrument panel. There are a lot of empty spaces up there. And leave some money in your wallet, he said. And give him something good, a camera, an iPod, a watch, a laptop, something that'll satisfy him. And you should be all right. Just don't make any fast moves and pretend you don't know any Spanish. Say, no hablo español. Keep repeating that. No hablo español. And because they'll figure you don't understand anything, they'll try to say a few words in English. Every Latin person, especially the thieves and the crooks, knows some words in English and they'll try to use them on you. But eventually, they'll give up on you and move on to the next car. Just don't make any fast moves and keep your hands on the steering wheel. Now, by this time, the crooks were about 10 cars in front of me, getting pretty close. And in this particular case, they pulled that poor guy out of his car, threw him on the ground, and started kicking him. And then came the game changer. Suddenly, the guy in the next car that was about to get robbed saw that two of the three thieves in front of him were occupied kicking a guy on the ground, and the third guy was in the car rifling through stuff looking for things to rob. Anyway, the guy in the car behind, the guy that was next in line to get robbed, he saw his chance to act and made a move. He jumped out of his car, pulled out a handgun of his own, and started firing away. And those two thieves, instead of firing back, like I expected, they turned around and started running. But as for me, I still thought there would be a gun battle, so I ducked down really fast and hit the floorboards in the front seat of the car. So I didn't see what happened next. But what happened was the two thieves took off running perpendicular to the highway and disappeared into the brush. And the other thief jumped out of the front seat and made a dash back in the direction of the traffic where they had a motorcycle parked, which was on the right side about 20 cars ahead. And when he got to it, he jumped on it and took off in a hurry. And about 20 or 30 minutes later, the cops came, pulling over from the opposite lane where the cars were traveling free in that direction. So I ended up wasting at least another hour there before getting out of the bottleneck, which was really massive by now because of the gapers block on the other side and the row of cop cars that was pulling up. And by then, those little neighborhood guys and gals and kids were back again selling their Coca-Cola cakes and Cheetos, car to car, door to door. And of course, all of us car drivers were completely jacked up on the incident. I mean, the panic and the adrenaline were at ultra-high levels, I can tell you that. But these little guys who were selling Cokes and other things were as calm as can be, and I didn't get it. So I asked one of them how he could take it so calmly, with bullets flying and all that. It's not like he didn't have something to lose. He was selling things and collecting money. So he could have been a victim too, easily. And then he told me that's the third time a robbery like that has happened in 3 weeks. And always at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because that's when the police patrols on that highway switch shifts. And all the cops are down at the police station, a couple of kilometers away, either punching out ready to go home, or the new guys just coming on are hanging around the dispatch desk waiting to get their assignments. The cops down here don't hang at Dunkin' Donuts. Though they do have Dunkin' Donuts down here, the cops just can't afford them. So anyway, this just wasn't a random assault. The crooks knew exactly what they were doing. And I had a chance to talk to the driver who took some pot shots at those guys. He was the hero of the day, all right. But before the cops even came, he asked us all to keep our mouths shut. And we did, because, well, he was a scary-looking guy, and he knew how to use a gun. And when the cops finally came, they never did quite get the whole story. Nor did they ever find out who fired the shots. And the guy who fired the shots told me later he would never admit to firing or even having that gun, because the gun wasn't registered, and he knew he'd be in trouble for carrying and firing an unregistered weapon. And at minimum, they'd take his gun away from him, and he'd never get it back. But he also told me on the sly, he knows he nailed one of those guys in the shoulder. And if the cops check the local hospital emergency rooms, they'd probably be able to pick him up. But like he said, this is Honduras, and down here, that stuff only happens on TV. The cops down here would never think to go the extra mile and do that. Now, speaking of gun ownership down here, I'm going to do a whole show on that in the near future, so stay tuned. And by the way, for all you first world expat wannabes up there who have guns already, I'll tell you why it's very difficult, if not impossible, to bring your favorite gun or guns down here. Because for one thing, the taxes will kill you. Some of these countries have 100% or more taxes on firearms, and that goes for whether you buy it down here or bring your own down. And just for your information, you just couldn't imagine the paperwork that it takes to bring a gun down. But you can buy them down here. There are gun shops everywhere. And generally, expats cannot own guns. But there are some tricks your lawyer can arrange for you to have one legally. But I'll be giving you the details on that in a future show, okay? Now last week, when I was talking about security at your house, I did mention that dogs are the number one thing that Latins are afraid of. And that includes Latin criminals, too. I mentioned that people down here are especially afraid of Dobermans and Rottweilers. They absolutely top the list. And down here, it's easy to get a purebred baby Rottweiler for from $75 to $100. And of course, for that price, you're not going to get the certified papers with that dog. But it will be 100% the dog you want, a Rottweiler. And if you're the kind of person who absolutely has to have a dog with papers, you'll pay from $300 to $400 for that privilege. Now, surprisingly, down here, there are about 50 Rottweilers to every one Doberman, which is very lopsided indeed. And that certainly is one reason why people are so afraid of Dobermans. There just aren't many around. And when you see one, and his cropped ears pop up at attention, just like a little devil, all you can think of at that moment is those Hollywood movies where Dobermans bare their teeth, attack, and tear the crap out of anyone within spitting distance. And we can thank Hollywood for that bad PR, but it really works in your favor if you're living down in Latin America, believe me. I've had all kinds of dogs and Dobermans, and the Dobermans are the tops in personality, loyalty, and friendliness. But you really have to get them as a puppy to bring them up right. Now again, you might wonder why there's 50 Rottweilers to one Doberman down here. That's because of the price. Down here in the land of the $300 a month salary, that's about what it costs for a baby Doberman. Without papers, that is. No average Latin would ever pay 1 month's salary for a dog. That would be like the average American guy spending $3,000 or $4,000 for a dog. Not likely. And down here, if you want papers for that Doberman, you'll pay $500 or $600. Now me and all my expat friends know that there's no use buying a dog with papers down here. Who cares about the bloodlines of their mothers and fathers and what country they came from originally? All we care is that they look and act like a Rottweiler or a Doberman. And by the way, I always recommend having dogs neutered when you buy them, because Latin America certainly doesn't need any more stray dogs roaming the streets. And there's another big thumbs up for neutering. When you consider, especially if you have a male, it tweaks their hormones way down and tends to lower their natural aggression quite a bit, which is a good thing. And also, just as a tip here, when it comes to Dobermans, there are animal humane societies and groups, especially on the internet, that are advising new Doberman owners not to have the operation where they get their ears cropped, because they say it's not natural, it's inhumane, and could be painful for the dog. Well, my answer to that is, if you don't get the Doberman's ears cropped, and therefore your dog doesn't look like your standard Doberman, well, you're defeating the purpose of having a scary-looking Doberman around the premises. Because if you don't crop their ears, they stay long and floppy. So if you have a Doberman with Snoopy ears that can't stand up at attention, you just lose more than half the effect. So go ahead and skip the ear cropping if you're up in the first world. But when you're down here in Latin America and you think that cropping a Doberman's ears is sad and inhumane, just think about how sad and inhumane it is when somebody breaks in your house, assaults you, steals your plasma TV, then shoots you. Just because your dog looked more like Snoopy than a real Doberman. And speaking of being inhumane to man's best friend, remember, they eat dogs in China. Now, I know what you might be thinking, and I've got some emails on this too. You hear stories of dogs getting poisoned by the bad guys, and then they break into your house. So what good's a dog if they poison it? Well, down here, of course, I've heard stories like that, too. And in places like Costa Rica and other high-volume tourist areas, stories like that are just rampant. But here's the real deal on that. I've had some friends, expats and locals, who've had their dogs poisoned in various countries down here, including Costa Rica. And I actually know a guy in Belize, an architect for that matter, who even told me, with some pride, he'd poisoned his neighbor's dog himself. But it's not what you think. The truth is, 95% of the time or more, people's dogs get poisoned because they're absolute nuisances in the neighborhood. And some neighbor gets fed up with some 24-hour barker and ends up stuffing a hot dog with strychnine and throwing it over the fence. Problem solved. Because you see, it's all about the fact that down here in Latin America, the average guy just does not take care of his dog. So there's a huge percentage of pet dogs down here that are just simply annoying and abusive. I repeat, Latins don't take care of their dogs. Just like the average Latin doesn't take care of his car, or his house, or his yard, or his personal belongings. If he does have a dog, it's usually left on its own to do just about whatever it wants. He doesn't train it to be good, teach it any manners, keep it from digging craters in the backyard, or stop it from humping your leg, or keep it from jumping up and ruining your nice clean pants. For that matter, most dogs down here are in dire need of a bath, no matter how wealthy the family is that owns them. They often let their dogs out in the morning to wander in the neighborhood all day. So it's often your neighbor's dog who's barking all night, digging in your garbage cans and crapping all over your lawn. And though that kind of behavior really gets on the neighbor's nerves, it doesn't seem to bother the owner. And worse yet, some of these supposedly indoor dogs are not quite potty trained. So when you visit, you gotta watch out for the puddles of pee and the landmines. Not to mention, nearly all Latin American dogs really stink. Down here, dogs are low on the hygiene scale. And that's another reason I always recommend never to have rugs or carpets down in Latin America. Now, did you ever go to a friend's or neighbor's house, and the moment you walk in, the dog is all over you? I mean, it's friendly, but it just won't leave you alone. Jumping up on you, licking you, hopping up on the sofa and wedging himself between you and the armrest, chewing on your shoes and drooling on your leg. Well, in Latin America, it's as if the owner doesn't even see that the dog is absolutely out of control. Anyway, just take my word for it, that 95% of the time when a dog gets poisoned, it's not a setup for a robbery to take place. It's usually just a pissed off neighbor. And for all you dog owners out there who might still be worried about your dog being poisoned despite of what I've just told you, every dog training book has a chapter on how to teach your dog to eat only from you and no one else. In fact, they have some very nice little gadgets, like those electronic dog collars that give the dog a little shock when he's doing something you don't want him to do, like taking some food from someone besides you. Anyway, those things really work great. And if you train your dog with one of those electronic collars, there's no chance of your dog getting poisoned. Now, I'm at the end of the show again, and I'll continue with household security on the next program. So I'll see you then.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.